In every ecosystem, there is a food chain. Plants feed on earth and water. Herbivores feed on plants. Carnivores feed on herbivores. And at the top of the food chain sits the apex predator. The creature with no enemies, no weaknesses. The beast that preys upon all with impunity. Feasting on the other predators. And this is not restricted to the animal kingdom, ladies and gentlemen. We, too, have our own predators. Mass murderers, serial killers, mad men and lunatic women, cults, shadowy organizations. And yet, they are not the top of their unholy food chain. It turns out that even the most malevolent forces in the world have their apex predators. Drinking whiskey in the kitchen and telling scary stories around the fire. Music, monsters, and mayhem, killers, cannibals, and cults, fearful fiction and furious fact, tall tales, and terrible truths. This is a scary home companion. In the late afternoon, Miami was damp, muggy, and loud. An older man left the market holding a paper sack under one arm. He wore sandals with black socks, a half-unbuttoned Hawaiian shirt over a sopping wet wife beater. He blended right in this neighborhood, which was mostly retirees. But although he might have looked like anyone else, he was not anyone else. He lived under a different name now, but his real name was Dr. Neil Wallace, noted anthropologist, lecturer, and author, who one day slaughtered his entire family and started a new life as an occult serial killer called the Haruspex. He walked back to his apartment, silently evaluating everyone that he saw. He would look at their soft bellies and think about the treasures inside. The Haruspex spent years killing people in the most vile way imaginable. He had been hunted and caught. He had been caged and studied. He had been released and watched. Many more years passed. And then, a few months ago, he had been given a new lease, a new purpose, a newly revitalized calling. The priest with the red hands. A man who at one time walked on the side of angels, a man who at one time had captured the Haruspex. This man had come to him with a glorious offer. An offer which brought him here, to Miami, to this small, humble apartment, where he had been making connections, talking to new friends, setting plans and traps, and all the while having the most wonderful dreams. He was part of a family now, a network. The priest was building something bigger than all of them. He rounded the corner and saw the front of his apartment building. Across the street was a car that he recognized. A dark sedan with tinted windows, with two suited agents sitting inside of it. The DRO had somehow found out he was here. They had sent people around every so often, every few days, to survey him. The priest had told him not to worry. Pretend you don't see them, Neil. Let them think they have you unaware. That gives you the power. He wandered past them, seemingly unaware, and the 63-year-old man made his way up the stairs. He stood in front of his apartment door for a couple minutes, looking back and forth, making sure that no one had followed him up. Finally, he felt comfortable enough to unlock the deadbolt and enter. He went into the kitchen to put his groceries into the fridge. When he turned around, he saw a man in an eye patch sitting on a chair in the middle of the room. Dr. Neil Wallace, closed casket Jack said to his victim. I assume you know who I am. The Haruspex eyeballed his knife rack. Now, now, Jack tisked. You can come and sit down on this chair and we can talk. Or I can beat the ever-loving shit out of you and then sit you on this chair and we talk. Why don't we play nice? The older man sat in the metal-framed dining room chair. His hands, damn it, they were trembling. He knew this was coming. This was part of the plan, but still he couldn't stop shaking. Jack had a gun, but he held it at his side. He didn't aim it at the man as he knelt down beside him and carefully cuffed him to the frame of the chair. Four sets of handcuffs, two for each arm. When the Haruspex had been secured, Jack set his gun down on the counter, next to the machete. He pulled a matching chair from the dining room table over into the kitchen and sat it in front of the Haruspex. He didn't talk, not at first. He just stared at the man, taking him in. Jack was motionless. No twitching, no fidgeting, no ticks, no quirks. It's like he was carved from stone as he stared into the eyes of his prey. I'm not one of them, you know, the Haruspex said. One of who? The emissaries. I'm not an emissary. Oh? Jack nodded. See, I got the impression that you weren't. You have a sadness about you, don't you? Long hungry, long denied. You're starving for it. I've actually been seeing this a lot of late. They string you along. That's what they do. And for you, they've been dangling a carrot for how long? 20 years? And look at you. You're nothing. The Haruspex looked at the floor. You're right. I'm nothing. I don't know anything. I can't tell you anything. Well, we'll see about that. Jack got to his feet. What are you calling yourself these days? Jerry Green? Is that right? I knew a Jerry once. I killed him. Jack picked up the machete. Neil, I'm going to ask you some questions, and I need to be sure that I get honest answers. So if you lie to me or make me unhappy in any way at all, I am going to chop off your arm right here at the wrist. See what I did here? And he pointed to the cuffs, a set around each wrist securing hand, and a second set further up just above the elbow and locked in so tightly that they were cutting off the circulation to the fingers. Tight enough to act as a sort of tourniquet. The Harrowspex struggled in his seat, pulling, yanking, but handcuffs hold fast. Jack stood in front of him, let Neil tire himself out. And then he said, "Just to show you that I'm not kidding, I'm going to cut off one of your arms right now. And then he did just that." Although Neil Wallace was a slightly built man with thin arms, it still took three solid whacks of the machete to take his left hand off at the wrist. A machete is not an efficient tool for limb removal, you see. But then again, that was the point. The handcuffs did their job remarkably well, staunching the blood flow more than Jack had expected. He took his seat again, facing this pale, weak man. How do I find Rourke? How do I find the priest? He got instant honesty. I don't know. I swear to God, I don't know. He is usually by the water. I can tell, I can hear it when he calls me. But I only talk to him on the phone. I haven't seen him in months. I only saw him the one time. Jack stared at him. His one eye blinked, only rarely. "I believe you, Neil. Who else have you met here? And don't act like you don't know what I mean. Who?" I met the boy. Rourke sends the boy, or Handsome Nick, when he has a note for me. Last week I picked up a woman from the airport, from Atlanta. Corinne, her name was. I met with the painter and the gamesman, and I saw the bookman once. I didn't meet him, but I saw him. And he told Jack the name of the marina. Jack pressed him for more information, and it all felt genuine, but none of it was very useful for anything other than deep background. The older man kept stealing looks at the front door. Jack asked him, "Are you waiting for someone to save you? Because no one is coming to save you. Those agents out front don't care about you. Rourke doesn't care about you. This new family you think you have, they're just using you to draw me out. They're not going to save you. They're giving you to me, right? You get that? You're a sacrifice at my altar. You have nothing to tell me. That's why they gave you to me. You have nothing. You don't matter. Not to them. Not to anyone. Those bickering butchers you spent so long trying to appease don't even know who you are. I am the only one who gives a damn about you at all. And I am going to make sure the legacy you end up with is not the one you wanted, not the one that you worked so long for." He twirled the machete, Something weird happened at the corner of his mouth that might have been a smirk. Might have been. He raised the blade to chop off the other hand of the harrow specs, and the older man held up his chin indignant. "You won't break me, Jack." "I don't need to break you, Neil. I'm more than happy to just chop off your other hand and present your worthless corpse to the world as a tribute to the hand collector. You will ultimately be remembered as a worshiper of Martin Rose, who..." "You motherfucker!" Neil Wallace almost overturned the chair, jerking his body forward. Jack had been searching for a nerve, and boy, howdy, had he found it. That son of a bitch jumped the line. He never served, not like me. He never went to the fucking island before. He never touched the dweller in the rock. He jumped the line and he took my reward. Jack said, "You're not a ghastly one. You're not an emissary. You never even had your own cult, did you? You're really nothing." This time, it only took 2 strokes to chop off Neil's hand at the wrist. Once again, he didn't bleed as much as he should have, but this time around, he had less blood to lose. Pale and gaunt, the harrow specs leaned forward in his chair, limp and unconscious, and spiraling towards extinction. Jack took his seat and watched the old man die. As he was washing his hands and rinsing off the machete in the kitchen sink, the house phone started to ring, and there was no doubt at all in his mind that it was for him. He hit the speaker button with the handle of the machete. "Hello, Jack. Do you know who this is?" Although they had never spoken before, Jack knew exactly who it was. The man formerly known as Frank Rourke, who had been reborn as the priest with the red hands. Some 3 hours earlier, Jack had walked past those 2 DRO agents sitting in the dark sedan on his way into the apartment building. The female agent in the passenger seat immediately made a call to her superior. "The one-eyed man just arrived," she said. The supervisor put her on hold and made a call to his superior, who in turn made a call to the supervising agent for the cell, Kevin Koja. Special Agent Kevin Koja spoke with the field agents personally. Direct communication and elimination of extra links on the chain were a keystone of DRO field operations. Everything was need to know. The other supervisors were cut off so that Koja could get the sit rep from the source. When the female agent had finished, Koja said, "Noted, Agent. I need you to maintain your cover, continue watching, contact me directly with updates. No matter what happens, do not intervene. You watch and you report to me and me alone. Are we clear? When they were done, Koja took a different phone from the back of his desk. This one was a high-tech burner of sorts, a disposable encryption device and scrambler only capable of calling one person. He pressed the green button, and he waited. It rang for 3 minutes, but eventually she answered. Lila Ambrose. "Special Agent Koja," she said. "I trust you have what I want." "Yes, ma'am," he said. "He is in Miami. He's found the Harrospecs." And he gave her the address. "Keep your people away no matter what," she snapped. She hung up on him. Koja poured himself a drink. Talking to her always gave him the shakes. Lila hung up the phone and had one of her men bring her another dedicated line. Lila was the head of her organization, of course. She was the bankroll, the visionary, the power, the driving force. She was the boss of bosses, and no one of any sense would dare say otherwise. But while Lila was the warlord, Sadie Jane was the sword. Her junkyard dog, her enforcer, her executioner, albeit a very well-mannered one. Sadie answered her phone quickly. "Yes, Miss Ambrose. Are you back?" "Yes, ma'am, we just landed." "I need you in Miami. It's Jack." Sadie scrunched up one corner of her mouth, a little bit concerned, and somehow Lila heard that change of expression. She asked, "You know who Closed Casket Jack is, right?" "Yes, ma'am, we were actually just discussing him on the flight." "How fast can you get to Miami?"
3 hours, tops."
"Sadie, this is priority one."
"Yes, ma'am, I understand."
"I want him alive, Sadie. I want him with us. Everything else is secondary."
"Yes, ma'am, I understand."
"Don't give me that shit, young lady. This is not another search and destroy. You had your fun. This is an extraction. I need you to find Jack." Sadie, Manny Cortez, and Oregon Cray left the private airstrip in an unmarked bulletproof panel van with Florida law enforcement plates. In the last 12 hours, they had collectively killed well over 100 men, and they were all dog-tired. But orders were orders. Manny took the wheel. Cray had shotgun. Sadie rode Toad in the middle of the back. While the other two cleaned guns and sharpened knives on the drive into Miami, Manny fiddled with the radio and tried to find some soul music. None of them talked about what was really on their minds. The fact that within the last hour, the long black veil and Lila had both given them the same command. Find Jack. Jack hung up the phone. They hadn't spoken long, and in fact, Jack hadn't spoken a single word. The priest said, Did you enjoy your gift? He was a peace offering, I'm sure you understand. If you go through his brain pan, as I know you always do, you will not find anything amiss. Because I can't give you too valuable a gift, can I? What you seek is price beyond riches. But I can give it to you after a fashion. I can give her to you, Jack. You and Becky, sweet, supple, screaming Becky. You can be reunited together again. Just follow the boy. There was a knock at the door. A young boy waited in the hallway outside for him, who couldn't have been more than 9, maybe 10. He was missing most of his teeth and flashed a mouth full of shiny, pink, empty gums. Without a word, the boy walked away. Jack followed. Down the steps, across the street, past the DRO agents, and towards the water. Sadie had the boys drop her 2 blocks off, well behind the DRO agents. She knew that they had been ordered to watch and not intervene, but she also knew that she wasn't supposed to know that, so she had to act like she didn't see them while keeping an eye on them. She snapped her gum as she walked and twirled her finger in the corner of her wig, constantly looking down at her cell phone. Not to actually check it, the screen was dark. She was just using the reflection to make sure the agents were staying in place. She almost bumped into Jack as he left the building. He was following a kid. She rolled her eyes and sighed and said, "Excuse you," and kept walking down the sidewalk. Jack followed the boy across the street. She didn't break stride, nor did she look back. She called the boys in the van and made sure that they had eyes on Jack. Manny was staying with the van. Cray was going out on foot. So now they could track Jack from 3 different vantage points. This was an extraction, not a kidnapping. Based on the trail of carnage and desecrated corpses he had left in his wake, Jack was not a man that they wanted to try and abduct unless absolutely necessary. When out of sight of the agents, Sadie finally doubled back, cut through a side alley. She told the boys to keep following, to watch Jack, but to wait until she could assess the situation personally. Cray came through her earpiece. "Sadie, you are going to want to see this." In a small park, overlooking a series of boathouses on the shore of the bay, the priest with red hands sat on a park bench and took in all the wonderful sights and sounds around him. So many happy families, so many children playing. He watched them play. Although he had all the memories of Ira Dunwich and could feel, could taste the ugly residue of his predilections, the priest had no such hunger. It was not that he valued the lives of children any more than other human life. He just did not crave them in that particular carnal fashion. He did love the teeth, though. That he couldn't shake for some reason. He took an Altoids tin from his breast pocket and shook out a child's tooth into the palm of his hand, dropped it into his mouth, and gently started to suck on it. Now, of course, the boy was different. The boy was a keepsake from his first night in this new life. Dunwich had taken that boy with ill intent. But the priest had seen a greater purpose in the child, to make him useful, to make him an emissary. All the others that the priest shepherded were allowed no such shortcuts. He had given Dharmesh a book full of secrets to start him down the dark path. For Rory Silk, it was the cursed painting of the Ravenous One. Others got a visit or a letter or a phone call. The priest could not hold their hands. That was not how it should work. He needed to show them the way, to point them in the right direction. And if they reached the dark path, then they would find the priest waiting for them with open arms and red hands. A leader, a prophet, a herald, a new breed of emissary for the ghastly ones. He needed acolytes, loyal foot soldiers, and so this foul priest had gone out into the world to seek out the broken, the lonely, those plagued with dangerously morbid curiosity. And he activated them. He pointed them towards their destinies. In recent decades, the enemies of the Nightmare People had grown in strength, in organization, in communication. They were fighting back in ways humanity had never before been capable. The evil chaos marshaled by Ira Dunwich was legendary. Decades worth of horror in service to the end of days. Hundreds upon hundreds recruited to the dark path. Thousands upon thousands of victims. But his days were done. And not just because of the death of the human shell, the meat suit named Ira Dunwich, but called by many other names, but because it was time for his antiquated methods to die. Rourke had a new approach, one badly needed because their numbers had not been this thin, weak, and marginalized in centuries. The religious kill squad called Nemesis had depleted their earthbound power base far more than anyone knew. In the span of 3 years, Cardinal Hume, with the help of Lila Ambrose and his paramilitary order, had been the scourge of cults around the globe, left thousands of bodies in their wake. But evil could never truly be expunged, although Nemesis came damn close. There was also the DRO, who had been studying the emissaries for some time and performing their own wicked experiments along the way. And now Lila, that Judas, that turncoat, was growing in power and strength and building her whole life around destroying the end of days. The priest couldn't settle for just striking their enemies down. This time, that would not be enough. He needed to build a new ghastly empire, starting with a group of loyal acolytes, disciples, like the boy and the Harrowspecs, and the others here in the park with him. The priest saw Jack enter the park and start walking across the grass, and he got to his feet to greet him. Jack was carrying a bag. There was no doubt a gun in that bag, but that didn't matter. He wouldn't use it. He wouldn't dare use it. Not with what the priest had planned. He looked at all of his people in turn. the scarred homeless woman by the boathouse, the mop-haired artist Rory Silk painting caricatures, the role player Dharmesh Anand playing bocce ball with some seniors, Corinne Lee and a second woman who is also wearing a surgical mask, talking with a group of special needs kids in wheelchairs. Jack didn't know who they were. He stood in front of the priest, who extended his hand, but Jack didn't shake it. "Jack, I think it's time we had a talk."
Normally, this is where I would thank you for listening to another episode of Scary Home Companion, and then plug my social media accounts, ask you to subscribe and review and support the Patreon, all of which you should do, by the way. But I'm not going to go through that rigmarole this time, not yet, because this tale is only half told. And the explosive conclusion is ready when you are. This episode was edited and mixed by the producer with red hands, and featured music by Dark Sun with Sidestep, Dungeon, A Blood Red Thing That Writhes, Samuel Corwin's field recording of Tibetan Monks, Modi Lemon with Predator, River Cult with Shadow Out of Time, and Chelsea Oxendine with the theme music. Well, go listen to part two. What are you waiting for?